All right, all right. Good morning, y'all. This is Brother Aaron, a.k.a. Brother A-Dub, and you are listening to Higher Ground, 90.1 FM on your listening dial. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers. They do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. So basically, as I always say, what I'm saying down here, if you like it or you don't like it, call me about it. Don't call WEFT or anybody else associated with WEFT. So listen, I want you all to stay tuned. I got a couple wonderful things to share with you. I have a couple of amazing guests who are going to be coming in at the 9 o'clock hour, but I have some other information to share with you prior to that. So I want to hit you with a little spoken word piece by a young man at the 2016 Harvard graduation. So y'all check this out and I'll be right back.
Education, then, beyond all other devices of human origin, is a great equalizer of the conditions of men. Horace Mann, 1848. At the time of his remarks, I couldn't read, I couldn't write. Any attempt to do so, punishable by death. For generations, we have known of knowledge's infinite power, yet somehow, we have never questioned the keeper of the keys, the guardians of information. Unfortunately, I've seen more dividing and conquering in this order of operations, a heinous miscalculation of reality. For some, the only difference between a classroom and a plantation is time. How many times must we be made to feel like quotas, like tokens and coin phrases, diversity, inclusion? There are days I feel like one, like only, a lonely blossom in a briar patch of broken promises, but hey, I've always been a thorn in the side of injustice, disruptive, talkative, a distraction with a passion that transcends the confines of my own consciousness, beyond your curriculum, beyond your standards. I stand here, a manifestation of love and pain with veins pumping revolution. I am the strange fruit that grew too ripe for the poplar tree. I am a dream act, dream deferred, incarnate, and a movement, an amalgam of memories America would care to forget. My past alone won't allow me to sit still, so my body, like my mind, cannot be contained. As educators, rather than raising your voices over the rustling of our chains, take them off, uncuff us, unencumbered by the lumbering weight of poverty and privilege, policy and ignorance. I was in the seventh grade when Ms. Parker told me, "Donovan, we could put all of your excess energy to good use." And she introduced me to the sound of my own voice. She gave me a stage, a platform. She told me that our stories are the ladders that make it easier for us to touch the stars. So climb and grab them. Keep climbing. Grab them. Spill your emotions in the Big Dipper and pour out your soul. Light up the world with your luminous allure. To educate requires Galileo-like patience. Today, when I look my students in the eyes, all I see are constellations. If you take the time to connect the dots, you can plot the true shape of their genius shining in their darkest hour. I look each of my students in the eyes and see the same light that aligned Orion's belt in the pyramids of Giza. I see the same twinkle that guided Harriet to freedom. I see them. Beneath their mask and their mischief exists an authentic frustration and enslavement to your standardized assessments. At the core, none of us were meant to be common. We were born to be comets, darting across space and time, leaving our mark as we crash into everything. A crater is a reminder that something amazing happened right here, an indelible impact that shook up the world. Are we not astronomers searching for the next shooting star? I teach in hopes of turning content into rocket ships, tribulations into telescopes, so a child can see their true potential from right where they stand. And injustice is telling them they are stars without acknowledging the night that surrounds them. Injustice is telling them education is the key while you continue to change the locks. Education is no equalizer. Rather, it is the sleep that precedes the American dream. So wake up, lift your voices until you've patched every hole in a child's broken sky. Wake up every child so they know of their celestial potential. I've been the black hole in a classroom for far too long, absorbing everything without allowing my light to escape. But those days are done. I belong among the stars, and so do you. And so do they. Together, we can inspire galaxies of greatness for generations to come. So no, sky is not the limit. It is only the beginning. Lift off.
On to higher ground we go. That is a spoken word piece by I don't see the young man's name on here. I'm gonna have to make sure I pull that up and share it with you all. But this is the Harvard 2016 graduation. I don't know if he was the valedictorian or whatever, but he gave the commencement speech basically, and that was it—a spoken word joint. So hip hop at Harvard. I know Dr. P would appreciate that as this hip hop train continues to roll on. So, y'all check him out. Listen to the words. He said, none of us at our core were born to be common. And I want to turn tribulation into telescopes. So, I mean, it was amazing for me to hear the words. And I haven't been able to do a lot of writing lately myself. So it's always good to find somebody else who's, passionate about that art and who can send a message like that to uplift. So I hope you all blast off this morning and blasting off in different ways. I'm sure you all have your DOC of choice as you wake up with your caffeine, nicotine, THC, whatever it may be. I hope that you are feeling good this morning, enjoying this amazing day that the Creator has made and that you are going to make the most of. So I have a few announcements for you. I hope you at some point make it down to the farmer's market this morning. It's a wonderful day. A lot of fresh produce, locally grown food, opportunities for individuals who are receiving some sort of support or subsidy. If you have SNAP benefits or whatever, Link or WIC, you can also go down to the farmer's market right there on the corner of, I believe it's Illinois and I don't remember. I keep forgetting that street. But anyway, I know it's on Vine Street, right? Old Lincoln, the Lincoln Square parking lot right across the street from the city building. And so go over there and get you some fresh produce. Have a good time. Mingle with the people. Meet some folks and talk about how wonderful your week was and support our local farmers. So also we have Brother Matt Duco, who is running for County Recorder of Deeds. He is having a brunch today at the home of the Jacobsons, Naomi and Eric Jacobson. So those of you who are looking for an opportunity to support Brother Duco, why don't you get on over there at 11 o'clock today for the brunch. There's going to be mimosas and all kind of different stuff. So we're going to have a good time over at the Jacobsons this afternoon at this brunch for a brunch at 11 this morning. So I'll be heading over there when I leave here. So if you want to support Matt Duco for Recorder, make sure you get over and come to the Jacobsons at 11 o'clock today. And that is on Main Street, Main and something over there. I don't have that address either, but I will get it. I'm sure the Young Democrats or somebody who's listening will send me the exact address for the brunch today for Brother Duco. Also, State Representative Carol Ammons will be having a community celebration. Her birthday is June 1st, and my mother's birthday is June 2nd. If you let her tell it, she was actually born on June 1st also. So we have this Aquemini thing going on because I'm an Aquarius and so is my father. So imagine that, you know, Aquemini at my mom and dad's house and Aquemini with me and Carol. So we have this kindred spirit and this connection that's going on. So June 1st, y'all, come on over to King Park at the Pavilion, King Park off of Lincoln and Fairview. Most of you know where King Park is, but Lincoln, North Lincoln Avenue and Fairview is one of the ways that you can access that and take one of the side streets there right up to the Pavilion. And we're going to be there having a wonderful time on Wednesday, June 1st, this coming up Wednesday, from 5 to 7 p.m., we recognize that it is an evening event, but it's going to be fun. We're going to have the inflatables. the large jumping inflatables and stuff for the children, face painting and ice cream and softball and barbecue. It is going to just be a good time in the community, celebrating the community as well as celebrating the birthday of our state representative with the community. She wanted to do something to give back and to share with everybody. So make sure you mark your calendars. Come on out, bring the children, have a good time. King Park at the pavilion from 5 to 7 p.m. this Wednesday, June 1st. So continuing in that vein, for the grown folks, you have also a birthday party for the state representative at the Flight Bar. Now that's going to be on June 4th. So make sure you get it right now. June 4th for the grown folks, a white attire affair will be at the Flight Bar from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Flight Bar on June 4th. From 7 to 10 p.m. you're supposed to wear all white, and you can go online and look up the information. Or you got a Facebook post. You can go online to carolammons.com and get the information about what it takes to be able to get into that event. And so we're trying to educate our community and to get people to come outside of their comfort zone and realize that it takes your ideas, your energy to help knock on doors and to make phone calls. And also your dollars to help support anything that is worth supporting and anyone who is worth supporting. So we're trying to get folks to come out and have a good time, have a party, have a little cake, have a little entertainment, as well as support your state representative to keep her independent of some of the corporate dollars that many of our elected officials get swallowed up by. So we need you to come on out June 4th to the Flight Bar, support the local business, support your state representative, June 4th from 7 to 10 p.m. Also to my SEIU members who are out there listening, we are still in negotiations with the University of Illinois, and we are still battling for staffing levels to be increased. We're still battling for making sure that our the jobs are not changed when you bid into a job or something like that, that you're still able to complete the job that you have actually bid on. And some of you understand it, some of you don't, but it's the process of our contract and our jobs at the university. And so we're fighting for language and fighting for protection at the workplace. So SEIU Local 73, we are in negotiations with the University of Illinois currently. Our contract ends at the end of in June or July, I should say. And so we want to make sure that we have your attention, make sure that you are aware of what's going on. We have not started talking about other aspects of our contract just yet, but I do want you to know that we are negotiating on your behalf, and we would love to see your face in the place during those negotiations. I want to say congratulations to my niece Charity, to Tyler, my nephew Tyler, to Amir, my son, and of course to Mariah, who has graduated. They all graduated from either high school. Charity's graduating from high school today at 11 a.m. So we wish her the best. And Amir, Mariah, and Tyler all graduated from middle school, so they are on their way to high school, and they are going to be trailblazers. They are not common. They are comets crashing into everything, you know. So Tyler is a athletic superstar. Mariah is the next model to grace all the runways. And Amir is the next urban horseman who's going to conquer and to achieve great things and win all types of championships as a horseman. So you all look out for them in the future. They have the future of accomplishments for us, our future comets. All right, y'all. So I want y'all to give me a call down here if you have anything in particular that you want to talk about. 217-359-5483. 217-359-5483. Or you can call 217-359-6545. 217-359-5483. Or 217-359-6545. And so we have a, at the top of the hour, I'm going to have Danielle Chenoweth. I believe Carol will be calling in as well, and maybe Brian Dolinar, who have been working, I don't even know how long. That's why I want to bring them on, to make sure that they can give the history and the trajectory of this work that they've been doing around the prison phone justice. And one of our wonderful people here at WEFT, I always consider her one of the stalwarts and one of the people who started this process, Sandra Otten, who brought this to our attention at the local level about the gouging and the kickbacks that were being received by the county board. What we're discussing here, folks, is the phone rates, how much it costs for a person who is locked up in the county jail or in the state penitentiary in Illinois, or even across the country, and the exorbitant and atrocious, outrageous amounts of money that we have to pay in order for our loved ones to have some communication with their children, with their siblings, with their parents, with their significant other, whoever it may be. You know, the amount of money, you all know who have loved ones who are incarcerated or in the county jail, how much those phone calls cost. Well, there's been a lot of work by these individuals I just mentioned, and about how we, how do we address that? How we get that money back into the pockets of the people of Illinois and these families who have their loved ones who are incarcerated, so that the cost is not so exorbitant and it doesn't break the bank, and to continue to take money out of the pockets of our least fortunate and those who have the least amount of money to spend on those phone calls. You all understand. Well, all right then. We got a call already. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Aaron. It is Sandra Otten.
Hey, hi. Sandra.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am great, too. I'm getting ready to ride my bike to my hometown of Effingham, Illinois today.
You're going to ride the bike to Effingham, huh?
I am. Bicycle.
Okay,
not,
then.
Not my motorcycle, so yeah. I'm getting ready to take off, but I wanted to say, you know, I'm not going to be listening at the 9 o'clock hour, but congratulations to the people who really did make this happen. I am so astounded at the fact that this victory for the phone justice has happened. It's just it's very interesting to watch our colleagues, Carol and crew, with Michelle, her office manager, Danielle Chenoweth, and Brian Dolinar, and to watch the process of getting a bill passed. So Carol having sponsored that bill, and the first bill, I think maybe one of the first bills she sponsored.
Definitely.
She's got other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so to watch that process and to see a victory, and just to, you know, have watched it happen here at the local level, and then be influenced and watch that whole shift of assumption that this is the way it was going to be, this is the way it is, and to see that change, and to know it's already happened at the federal level for federal penitentiaries. Now we have it here at the state level. We have it, you know, we have it locally at the jail, that people, families can't be ripped off in that way, and poor people just funding government services on the backs of poor people was outrageous. So,
you know, I wanted to ask you something, because I think I know the answer to this, but I really want to highlight something. So I'm going to ask you this. What was your motivation way back when you said, hey, look, I just discovered something? How did you even stumble across this, these kickbacks that were taking place at the county level?
Well, when my son was incarcerated, I saw some things that were pretty outrageous. That was one of them. The fact that I had to pay, I mean, literally, I know it's, you know, hard to imagine, but I think that I was paying sometimes $10 or $15 for a 5 to 10 minute phone call, you know, 'cause you would, anyway, it was just ridiculous. And I knew that his mental health, his ability to cope with being incarcerated at, he was only, I don't know how old he was, he was 19 maybe or something, his ability to be able to have any thread of not being suicidal, literally, relied on me being able to talk to him. So I'm going to tear you while I'm talking about it.
That's then, all right. That's what's driving this, and that's why I wanted you to share it.
Go ahead. I knew he had to talk to me. When he talked to me, we didn't talk about the weather. We talked about, oh, my God, Mom, you don't know what I just saw in here. You wouldn't believe what just happened here. There is, he was traumatized, and he had to have a connection in order to not just react to that trauma in a way that was going to be, you know, harmful to himself and others. And so, you know, prison and jail is trauma. And to provide no mental health services really to speak of, and to then to not be able to know that you can call and talk to someone through this. So that started it, Aaron. But then I was so wrapped up, of course, at that time, in just surviving myself and helping him survive. I was in no place to do any activism work around it. But in my mind, I planted this idea that when this is over for me, I've got to help get this stopped. And so it just festered there for a while until we had a death at the county jail, a suicide. Oh, I wish I could remember his name and honor him. Because it was just such a tragic...
Was it Terrell Layfield? Or
yes, it was. Thank mm-hmm. you. So Terrell Layfield took his own life in our county jail, and I knew why. I mean, he was traumatized. That's why. You don't, he had family. He was connected. It wasn't like he was had been suicidal previously. So I called his widow and talked to her, and heard her story, and so then I thought, well, what can I do? And then I connected with you and with Steve Hartnett, and we came up with three things that we knew needed to change. The other thing that I observed at that time was this way that they jerked people around with visitation, and jails and prisons still do this. They make up their own rules as they go along. It changes week to week. You never know what they're going to be. So they really do not foster people being connected to their family. And at that time, the jail thing that was happening was that they had a 50-person limit on the number of visits that could happen in any one day at our county jail. So if you were number 51, you didn't get to see your inmate, regardless of the fact of that you had perhaps been waiting for 3 or 4 hours to see them, regardless of the fact that there was 3 or 4 hours left of visiting time. It didn't matter. When that 50 number was done, they were done. And so this required then all the family members to arrive hours early. So in order to get a visit at, which started at 10 o'clock, I think, you had to literally be at the jail at like 7 o'clock in the morning waiting in line. So you were one of the 50 in line, which is just a jerky thing to do for no reason. It was just not common sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there was no reason for it. With the phone thing, you could see what the reasoning was. It was money. But there was even no reason for this. It was just the way power happens sometimes. They think they can do anything they want, so they do it, you know.
So the visitation was the first thing, the first item that we thought we could change?
Well, we went with three things in mind. So it was the visitation and the phone. And what was the third one? I'm blanking on it.
Yeah, I sure I don't remember it either. So.
I don't either. Well, we'll think of it.
Okay.
Well, anyway... I remember it happened too, and it wasn't that, anyway.
Well,
I can't
remember. This is one of the things.
How long
ago
was it? It was like almost 15, 20 years ago.
Right. And that's part of the point here. And I'm really basking in the beauty of community radio at this particular moment, because I really didn't have a thorough laid out agenda for this first hour. So here you see the beauty of, a caller, a citizen, so I just, you know, you call
you,
in
yeah,
and say, hey, listen,
right.
I just wanted to say something about the phone justice piece. So now we get to dig a little deeper. But now you're bringing back to me things that I didn't even remember. I remember Stephen, Professor Hartnett, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I remember us talking about this, but I didn't remember all of the visitation and stuff like that. So, but I really wanted the listeners to understand, right, that what you're talking about is, first, there was an effect on you that brought it to your attention in a way that you couldn't ignore it.
Right.
And then you reached out in a compassionate way to Terrell Layfield. That was another trauma piece that made you say, oh, my God, I really have to do something about this.
I was actually doing community radio at the time. I was producing IMC Radio News at the time.
Mm-hmm. And so then you reached out to.
Gave me a little bit of a, you know, voice of a voice and mm-hmm. some confidence that that I could possibly you know, not just be spinning my wheels.
Mm-hmm. So this is yeah. So then you reached out to Terrell's widow and you heard her story and you could hear her cry and her pain, and you took it from there and you brought the issue to us as a community organization and other community organizers.
Right. I went to see you Citizens for Peace and Justice meeting for the first time. So I knew about you through that, you know, through just the fact that you guys were having your meetings.
And so I'm seeing so much that's coming out of this. And then we began to study the issue and organize and educate other folks.
Right. So
ourselves.
Then one of the first things we did was we made some news stories about it. And we tied it to the fact that there had been three jail suicides within a year, about mm-hmm. a year and a week. Terrell's was the third one. So that was certainly news, and just like the education about that it isn't okay to have jail suicides, you know, that it is really, that it's going to happen in jails unless you prevent it. I think that was, you know, people think, well, suicide is suicide, you know, people are going to get whatever, but to really educate people that, it's not okay for that to have happened here. And there's a reason for it. There's a systemic reason for it. It wasn't Terrell being depressed wasn't mm-hmm. the reason for it, right?
Right, right.
And so to really think about that, it wasn't because we needed a new jail where it couldn't happen. You know, it wasn't as simple as that. There wasn't, that's what they would have liked to have thrown at it. You know, well, we should have, well, anyway, that there was a systemic reason for it. But then the process got interesting for me because I had never really tried to affect change this was at the county board level then. So I had to figure out, okay, well, where is it that we can have the change at? What can the change be and how to make that happen? So it was the first time I had quote unquote lobbied. So, you know, I got a list of who's all on the county board and started talking to them.
And I remember that night. I will never forget this night because as the position that I'm in now as an elected official and also with Carol, I remember us on Washington Street at the old Democratic headquarters, and many of those members, the county board members, the Democratic county board members had become sort of standoffish with us, right, because of the organizing and the agitating uh-huh. that we had been doing around that. And I remember waiting to get into the headquarters one night, and Barbara Wysocki was standing out there with us, and it was me, you, and I think somebody else. And you were giving it to Barbara pretty good, and I could see her shutting down, right? And I said, Barbara, look, we recognize that you all are human beings and you have other lives and other things that you have a life and that you're doing other things. We're not trying. It was something that I said along those lines that she said, well, I'm glad somebody finally said something like that. And I really honestly felt like there was a breakthrough there that say, look, we're just simply trying to bring about a change that we know needs to happen. And we're trying to educate you all so that you understand what's taking place. We're not trying to take shots at you personally. We're not trying to say that you are a worthless human being or something. You know, we're just simply trying to get you to see what we see and create a policy that is in the best interest of everybody and is a more humane way of doing this. And I think that it really, all of that started to, I felt like that moment was a breakthrough for us.
Well, there was another piece of it, which was when I started checking out what the contract was and how it was working. Mm-hmm. It turns out that Deb Prussy and is it no that's right
Deb Busey.
Right. Deb, what's
Busey.
Her name? Who's
Deb Busey.
Deb Busey, thank you. Mm-hmm. Deb Busey, and then she had a co-person who was also the county administrator. Mm-hmm. And I called their office to find out, I want to see that contract. I want to see what's going on with it. Well, she was on vacation, or he was, one of them was. But the other one had their secretary, or whatever, pulled the contract. And then the secretary said to me, well, it seems as if this contract is about to expire in 2 weeks. And it turns out that they had sort of not been paying attention to that, and it was just going to self-renew. It may have been 2 weeks. It may have been, I think it was literally 2 weeks. I think it mm-hmm. was a two-week period of time. And so then I contact Jenny Putman, who was on the county board at the time, and a very sympathetic ear. Mm-hmm. And I said, Jenny, this is set to expire in 2 weeks. She goes, oh my gosh, when we voted on that last time, we said never again. They rushed it through because we didn't have time to think about it or do something different or bid the contract out. And we, as Democrats, had said we would not do that again. We would not take that $11,000. Well, that's when I discovered the $11,000 kickback. That I did not know of that. I knew that the cost of phone systems was outrageous, but $11,000 a month was being kicked back to the county. She said it wouldn't happen again. Here was about to renewed by default because nobody was on top of it. So the timing of it couldn't have been more perfect. And that's why we had the victory, because it seemed like, in part because they didn't have time to prepare their defenses, either, because mm-hmm. they had let it sort of get under the radar. So that's kind of what happened. And then we did petitions. We did an online signature petition. We talked to every county board, person individually and talked to them about it. And I'll never forget that Deb Finan told me, I could care less about prisoners. Really, could care less about them, Sandra. Mm. You know, now, people with mental health issues, I do care about them, because she does. She has a big heart for the County Mental Health Board and other things, but she's like, she was on the county board at the time, and she just said, prisoners, that you know, they've done their crime, they need to do their time, I really couldn't care what their conditions are. And I thought, you know, you're talking about my son.
Wow.
You're talking about my child, and he is, you know, and other people's children and people's lives. You're talking about human beings. Do not get this. And so, you know, it opened my eyes to the way that a lot of things need to be recognized about prison.
Well, you know, that's a very important point, because what you're talking about is, one, you know, other human beings. How Deb came to that conclusion of not caring about them, or they done their crime, they've got to do their time. I don't even want to get into how she would get to that point. But you were in a different space, right? And so it shows all the listeners out there and the people who are watching this process why it's so important to have a Carol Ammons or Aaron Ammons or whoever it is that who has that compassion, or why I'm supporting Bernie the way that I am. Mm-hmm. Because we need people who are still in touch with their humanity and have that empathy and understanding for all other human beings. We understand that work has to be done. There's a process, and there's going to be a penalty for some of your behaviors, but you don't lose your humanity, and we shouldn't treat you in an inhumane way because you've made a bad decision or a series of bad decisions, right? To end up where you are. And some people don't even belong there. Right? I don't, you know, so, right, I mean, right, I just, I'm really right. disturbed that, by that.
Well, first of all, at the county jail, they're not even proven guilty yet.
That's right. Exactly.
You know, so let's start with that.
Right. And even if you are, quote unquote,
that they're in there because they
guilty.
Can't pay a fine, that your son would be able to get out because he would pay a fine and a lawyer, you know, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah. So, and even who, you know, this whole who finds you guilty and what is guilty and what's not.
Well,
you know.
Karen, that speaks to something that went one way that I try to educate myself and have compassion is because on the, I think it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, how high safety is, right? You need to feel safe. And both the people who are putting people in jails are responding to that need on a human level. They want to feel safe. That's why we have the death penalty. People feel safer because we have the death penalty. It doesn't make them safer, but they feel safer.
Right, right.
And guy in the hood packing a heat is feels safer because he is. He's not safer, but he feels safer.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody is just responding on a human level, but we have to help people actually be safer
and not respond to
what makes people safer.
Yeah, not respond to fear.
Right.
Not just be responding solely based on fear.
Hmm. Yes. Yes.
Well, it's interesting. Wow.
Yeah. So that's how that all. So it came down to a vote. It happened, and we got the kickback so that it got eliminated, and they no longer chose the contract for the jail based on how much money they were getting back from the telephone company.
So then
Danielle took it to a federal level and worked with Magnate
mm-hmm.
on that, and then you guys took it at the state level, Carol and company. So that was which we'll talk about the next hour. But can I talk about one thing before?
Absolutely, go for it.
I just wanted to ask you a question about the Illinois Seven. So this is a group of people who African Americans who feel like they've been discriminated against in some way. Some systemic racism is going on at the University of Illinois with some service workers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you where the union plays into that. Are they represented by a union? And do you know anything about that?
So the vast majority of that group are mid-management people, and they are either academic professionals or they are not covered by a union. So I am aware of, now there's a couple of them. One was a carpenter, now he's retired. And so there's only usually the unions fight while you are an employee, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and then you would fight there may be some times where the union will bring in an attorney to fight an issue that is a discrimination or something that we have to take to arbitration or something like mm-hmm. that. So, yes, they will fight. We will be in the mix for most of those people who are actually in the union. But most of those individuals were not.
Okay.
So only the young man who had the noose thrown on the table near him. He's a part of the I think it's AFSCME, if I'm not mistaken, but he's a grounds worker. And then the individual also, one of the guys was a carpenter. But the rest of those people, to my knowledge, are all mid-management people.
Okay. Well, I do have, I want to just plug my own show here for a minute. So I'm producing CU Progressive News every Monday night at 6 to 7 p.m. on WEFT. And then it replays on UPTV on Thursday nights at 10 p.m. And I covered this story with Dr. Sandra Cato, who is with the NAACP. And a couple of weeks ago on it, and I'm going to be doing some follow-up in the next couple of weeks with interviewing some of the UI7, so I wanted to just sort of be on the same page with you and let people know that our shows are symbiotic, and so listeners of Higher Ground, if you could also, I'd like to also just always tell people, tune into WEFT, listen to WEFT, and there's so many interesting things that are happening there. We have new drop-ins and podcasts going on, and, you know, WEFT is a community resource that I know some people probably just tune in Higher Ground 8 o'clock on Saturday mornings, but tune in and support WEFT because we do need your support. I'm on the board, and we're making a lot of decisions decisions about how to make this community radio station viable, and we need all the support that we can get to keep it, and it's such a valuable resource, as we know right now, because of these victories that we're experiencing and the struggles that we're still in.
And this is that avenue, that voice. You talked about having community radio and the confidence that it gave you that you would be able to get your message out there. A lot of people out there have issues and have concerns, but they feel like they don't have an avenue to share that concern and to get it out to the people. Of course, social media does help nowadays, but it also helps to have the training that you can get down here at WEFT on how to work the board or how to use media and to also connect with the IMC. I think I learned a lot through the IMC and understanding the importance of being able to create your own newspaper. Of course, we saw that quite a bit.
Progressive News, the news show that I'm working on, is a joint venture between WEFT and the Public Eye. Okay. And we're working between the two, and we have new recording equipment for people to help do their own, make their own news stories. If you have something that you want to make we have a new portion of it that's just called Person of Interest. If you want to be trained on our audio recording equipment, go to your interesting neighbor, interview them, and I'll show you. We'll teach you. We'll do training with you to show you how to make that into an audio that you can have played on the radio. So we've got a lot of exciting stuff going on that really needs to happen so that we do have grassroots journalism and not be relying on the News Gazette and even Smile Politely, because everybody doesn't go to Smile Politely, you know. So we have to have just the airwaves and the print media, you know, connected here. So that's all happening. And if anybody has a news idea or wants to get involved, they can email weft90.1@gmail.com. So weft90.1@gmail.com. And I'll hook you up with how you can be part of also, either I'll help you make a story or you can make a story or, you know, be trained or just give me a story idea. That's all available to WEFT listeners these days.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you,
I hope
thanks
you have
for,
a safe ride.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. So that was Miss Sandra Otten, who is, I've always found her to be a very, honest, straightforward, and hardworking person who is doing everything she can to make sure that WEFT stays strong or it gets even stronger. And so I thank you, Sandra, for all of the work that you're doing. And of course, it is befitting for her to be the person talking to us as a prelude to the conversation we're going to have at 9 o'clock about the prison phone justice, because I want the listeners to really understand your gift, your skill, your talent, your virtue, your pain can be turned into a very productive energy and maybe even a policy, because something and someone or maybe a whole bunch of people are hurting and are being harmed because what you know to be real, you haven't had the opportunity or you haven't taken the opportunity to share it with other people and get things changed, to get the laws changed, to get a policy changed at your city council, at your park district, at your school district, at your state level. You have that policy. You have that power to change that policy. And, you know, many of us have heard this thing about the trickle down theory. I want you to think about the percolating up theory, right? Because you just heard where a mother who was pained by the incarceration of her son, who connected to another mother who was and another widow who was pained by the death of her husband. And then they reached out to another community organization, CU Citizens for Peace and Justice. Right. So you see these components that are necessary in your community. And then they brought that pain and that passion to the group who had been working on and organizing around criminal justice issues. And we all collectively began to educate ourselves, to study the issue, and then to share it with other people and to organize other people, educate them about the issue, and then organize some more and go and agitate the system to shake things up, right? With marches and with press conferences and visits to the county board and being disruptive when we had to. And then we began to organize and educate the elected officials, right? And what you saw, as what Sandra described, is after we were finally able to get them on board and to either educate some and force the rest to go the direction and follow the will of the people, then you see how it percolated all the way to the federal level, right? And Magnet picked up the charge and began to change it at the federal level, right? And then now you see where, because you helped elect a state representative like Carol Ammons, you were able to now have this issue brought and have somebody to champion the issue who understands the issue because she was a part of CU Citizens. She's able now to lobby her colleagues and to bring Danielle and Brian into the fold at the state level and to get this change at the state level, which is going to amount to the access that our loved ones need to be able to call home and talk to their children and family members. But also it's going to put millions of dollars back into the pockets of individuals, of poor families and poor people who are just struggling to make ends meet to try to stay in touch with their loved ones. You can be a part of that. You need to be a part of that. Because many of you who are listening right now have similar issues, or you have something that is sort of boiling over in you that needs to percolate out and upward so that we can affect change in our society, our community, immediately. So it's a process. It takes time. Sandra said, look, we brought this issue up, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago. Right. And now it's finally getting passed at the state level, but it's been done locally at the county board. It's been done at the federal level and now at the state level. So you can look at the example of one mother who was hardworking and diligent and compassionate and reached out to another. And look what happens from that. That is how public policy can be formed. It does not have to just be by the Koch brothers or some rich group of people who pay a bunch of lobbyists and pay off and buy elected officials and get policies put in place to serve their corporate needs or their profits. It can actually come from the grassroots level, percolate up, and have elected officials like Carol who can carry something and lobby other folks to her other elected officials to bring about this change. So you're going to hear the rest of that story here coming up at the top of the hour, the 9 o'clock hour. I did want to quickly share something with you because Sandra talked about fear, phases and stages that lead to phrases and pages of debriefing, reconditioning my belief in self. Even when I turn to God, it says, I gave you dominion and breath. What else? Do you want me to live life for you? What are you going to do while I live your life? Don't even say I can't when you can. You have to think and believe that you could. Then it doesn't matter who should be the best, who passed and who failed. The test won't be curved, so nobody's being bailed out. Nothing can save you, not even reasonable doubt. Mind wars are destroying nations. We see them on billboards, TVs, and even gas stations. Poverty and mediocrity are promoted and accepted. Your status is reflected by which price you pay. There's power in what you say and hear. So empty your mind at night and throw away all pieces of fear.
darling. Can you picture this?
Dream if you can, courtyard,
an ocean of violets in bloom. Animals strike curious.
All right. That's my shout out to Big Prince, Amir, and Lil Prince Chase out in Tupelo, Mississippi. And also just me reminiscing on what the music industry lost when this brother made his transition. How can you just leave me standing alone in the world? It's so cold. All right, y'all. So, I think I might have struck a Prince nerve here. That's what we got here. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, this is Jim Iman. Good morning, Aaron.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Pretty good. This is for Sandra Orton. I hope she's listening, because I think WEF can get some funding through the Bertha Foundation. It's Bertha Foundation, one word, lowercase, .org. So that's one thing. The second thing is, do we ever get in Urbana here we welcoming Syrian refugees?
I will have to check on that. I know, Jim, you asked me to do that, and I did not. So I'm going to write it down right now.
Okay.
And make sure that I double check with the mayor on that. And if we don't, then we'll be talking about how to make that happen.
Okay, very good, because that's going to really tick off Bruce Rauner. We have to publicize it once we do.
Okay, I got you.
That's the other aspect of it. Yeah, just to do it and then not know that it's been done by anybody doesn't work. So anyway, just wanted to check in with you, and good show today.
All right, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right, so we're going to I'm getting prepared here for my guest to show up. And I hope they don't just leave me standing alone in the room. It's so cold because the air is on down here and I'm a little chilly. All right. But listen, anybody else who's out there listening, you've heard this conversation. You may have some questions. You may have some concerns, some comments. You can give me a call at 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545. 217-359-5483. Or 217-359-6545. Aaron, why do you keep saying 217? We all know that we live in the 217, but you're also streaming live at weft.org. So you can click on there, click on listen live, and you can also hear us in other, all over the country. Go ahead, caller. You are on the air.
Good morning, Brother A-Dub. How you doing?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful, Sister Carol. How are you?
I am wonderful as well. Wonderful, beautiful day.
Yes, you are, absolutely.
I thought I listened to the history of the prison phone justice work, which was very fitting for Sandra to lay the groundwork this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff that she recounted, I didn't remember either, which is quite remarkable when we put all of our pieces together. To tell that story, it's a great story of citizen participation.
It's also how history gets lost if you don't write it down, right?
Yeah. Because it's so many pieces that are taking place while you're in the midst of the work that you kind of forget about those pieces. So I'm so happy that she put that in perspective, certainly for the next hour of the show, that we'll talk about this effort, I'm sure, at the state and the national level, and how these things connect. I just wanted to say that people may think that what they're experiencing it by themselves, and that mm-hmm. That it's not a larger issue. It's just what I'm experiencing. And in many cases, if you just talk to another person, you may find out that they are also experiencing that same thing. And then collectively, you can figure out how to address it. Everything that happens in Springfield, most of it percolates from the grassroots. Mothers who come to Springfield to demand action on gun violence, those are just women in their community who may have lost their children. And, we know people personally who are advocating on that issue. And each week when I see her, it just reminds me of not only her loss of her two children, but that she's so dedicated to the work of ending gun violence in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that comes from one person's experience connecting to other people.
I'm talking about Miss Delphine Cherry.
Yes, yes. Now it's a movement that has grown and is strong in Illinois, and they are in the capital lobbying. They're not professional lobbyists. These are women, mothers, who experience loss in their community. So it is possible that, what a person is experiencing, one person may experience it, but if you just tell the right person enough, tell enough people, you'll find yourself working on that issue and bringing justice for thousands of families.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, why don't we, I know that we talked to Belden Fields the other day, and so I wanted to talk a little bit about this. He said to us basically when you approached him and asked for his support when you were going to make the run for state rep, that there was some concern, on his part about what would happen to the local organizing and what would be the impact on would you be able to take that organizing to Springfield with you, or would we lose it? Would the community lose it? In essence, I'm just sort of paraphrasing what he said. And so I kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit, about how that played a part in this prison phone justice bill and the work that was being done around that. And just let me say to the listeners out there, Sister Carol is on the 5483 line. If you are trying to get through, try 217-359-6545. 217-359-6545. Go ahead.
you know, often that may be the case in other places where, you know, the person who's organizing on a local level goes on to do other work, and therefore you lose that the influence of the organizing tools in that local area. I don't think that that has been the case for us. We've been organizing on a broad level, and I'll just give an example to that. Around criminal justice reform, the issue, obviously, that you're going to talk about in the next hour, started at the local level, and then we were able to take the experience, the work, the organizing, and affect the state and federal level around this one issue. We also have experiences around environmental issues, right, that we worked on, and I worked on as a county board member around the Muhammad Aquifer. You know, at that time, as a board member, our board enters into and initiates a lawsuit against the Peoria Disposable Company, who was not only dumping over the aquifer toxic chemicals, but had built this massive holding tank in order to expand their ability to dump over the Muhammad Aquifer PCBs and MGPs. That started for us here at the county level, ended up a 14-county multiple-city lawsuit that hadn't come to a close. But we were able to, as after my election, continue to fight that many legislators had before me to finally put an end to that. And we were able to do that through legislation in our first 6 months. But so to me, these things have been able to connect. And I can talk about education equity, but these have been connected by the local organizing, the local activist community, taking it to the state level, and thereby passing policy that brings a level of justice and safety and security to all the families in our state. So I don't think I'd lose it. Now, my direct influence on the campaigns on a local level has shifted and changed. That's true. But my involvement around the issues have expanded. And I think that that's the good thing about what's happening right now. As I continue to serve the community, that's what's happening with us.
All righty. All right. So I don't know where Danielle is, but she's on her way, I'm sure. Why don't you call her?
All right. I'll be happy to call. I'm sure she's on her way. But I can tell you, as of yesterday, Brian Golliner, myself, and Wanjel Robinson, the young lady who's been working on the local level, and on the, she actually went to the FCC as a 18, 19-year-old and testified before the Federal Communications Commission about her experience as a young child growing up and having both of her parents incarcerated. I believe both of them were drug-related offenses, and that's how they ended up both being incarcerated at the same time. That's a whole other discussion we should probably come back to, but Wanjel testified at the FCC level their first time doing anything like this, because she had a personal involvement in the issue. And then she came back with Brian and Danielle and others who have been organizing around prison phone justice in Illinois, and testified multiple times at the state level.
So Wanjel went to D.C. to testify in D.C. Is that correct? Yeah, well, is that what you're saying?
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. Wanjel went to Washington, D.C. to lobby on Capitol Hill in front of the Federal Communications Commission to get them to act on something called the Right Petition. And Danielle will talk about that when she comes in. But the Right Petition was a African-American grandmother who, like Sandra, could not afford to talk to her incarcerated family member, and she was one of the persons, I believe the ACLU may have contacted her at that time to file something called the Right Petition, which is named after her, to get the Federal Communications Commission to regulate the prison phone industry. And it took 10 years also for that to happen. And so the Right Petition is what kicked off the regulation and opened the door for us to see some real justice for families in relationship to the prison phone calls and contracts. And that's where we are at this point.
So, Juan, I'm really intrigued by this particular aspect of it as well, because I'm really trying to convey to the listeners how important it is, even just for what we consider, quote unquote, the average citizen, the everyday citizen, the person who is not necessarily in these positions of authority or sitting in some of the spaces that you sit in, or even that Danielle and Brian and myself have sat in. But Wangel, being a young lady who just had a story and a pain associated with that story, and the courage to come forward and share that information, is a critical link to this entire thing, I believe. And I just didn't think to reach out to her to try to see if she would come on as well, and I should have. So
I think as this goes forward, it's going to be a lot of impacted families that come forward. Like you remember Nancy Willimon, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, she came and told her story to us at CU Citizens for Peace and Justice, and it was the same story, right? And because of her willingness to help us, she helped in a different way, right? She contributed to the campaign financially to help us to continue to wage the effort. So people had different roles that they played in it, but nonetheless, everyone really helped in that case.
So absolutely. And so what is your message to individuals, like when you see this? I'm kind of stuck here because I really want to get into some of the meat and potatoes of this, or the broccoli and cauliflower of this conversation, and I'm feeling a little some type of way that the right people ain't here yet. So let me do this. How about I do this, because I was supposed to do something else anyway. My underwriting for our show here for Higher Ground, Kevin Elliott Counseling is the underwriter for our program. So Elliott Counseling Group has 35 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including state employee insurance, is accepted. There is also a self-pay sliding scale. You can contact Kevin Elliott or his staff at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That's ElliottT CounselingGroup.com. Or you can call them at 217-398-9066. That's 217-398-9066. You know, I often talk about this because, you know, as Sandra was talking about the impact that incarceration had on her son and his mental state, we also have to celebrate, or I shouldn't say celebrate, talk about the importance of people, you know, reaching out and having someone that they can sit down with and have a counseling session or something like that. So I certainly encourage folks, if you're going through something and you don't have that individual to talk to you in a healthy manner, that you reach out to Elliott Counseling and seek that assistance. All right, so Carol, you had a response, but also Mr. Brian Dolan, a.k.a. BD, a.k.a. the Pink Panther, is in the building. Y'all watch out
I,
now.
You know, I had a sneaky suspicion that I heard the song of the Pink Panther playing, and so I thought that was my cue to get off the line. So I'm going to get off the line and listen up to the rest of the show.
Well, good morning.
All right, Sister Carol. I thought you was gonna hold on and listen in case you needed to interject. But if you gotta go,
I can always call back. I wanted to hear them.
All right, peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings.
What's going on? Talk to the people. Let me turn your mic on. There we go.
Got everything working. There we go. Hello. Good morning. How y'all doing out there in Champaign, Urbana?
All right, who are we talking to?
World. This is Brian Dolliner here from the Independent Media Center and the Campaign for Prison Phone Justice here in Illinois. Getting up bright and early. I don't know how you all do it, man. Shoot. It's like, I just get off the road, you know.
Is so that right?
We've been in back and forth to Springfield all week. You know, you guys are just a role model, I got to say, you know, and you raise the bar for the rest of us, you know. You juggling family and work and life and everything, you know, you got to deal with on a daily basis. And being able to get up and go slugging back at it again, you guys are something else.
Well, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. And so why don't you talk about that a little bit as a prelude? Because member of CU Citizens for Peace and Justice for years. We've done a lot of work here locally. And, you know, the conversations we've had offline about where does a group go from here, right? You know, and it seems to me that you and Danielle and Barbara and some other folks have picked it up and taken it to Springfield. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, we're finding ways to make, you know, to put this fight on, whether it's at a federal level, a national level, because we were in D.C. last year fighting for prison phone justice, mm-hmm. or whether it's for, you know, state politics. And, you know, Carol's entrance into the legislative process is really up the game for us all. And we'd have been able to take it there. And yet we're still covering the stories on the ground. We're getting, calls day in and day out. That people are getting caught up in the system, you know, whether it's
Toya Frazier, you were talking, you had written a piece on Toya, right?
Right. So it's you know, it's people, it's loved one, it's you know, the Frazier family is large in the community, and you know, when you have a loss like this, Toya Frazier dying in the jail, it leaves a big void in the community, and nobody's really out there addressing it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm getting calls daily about La Migra, ICE showing up in town, immigration here, picking people up. So this is a daily assault on us, you know, and so it's important that we're out here fighting back at all levels on every front, because we got to take it there. It's a crucial time right now.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad to see you this morning. It's always good to see you in the building, and also to see the IMC and independent media. The public eye still always having the people's stories being told. What we got? What's the latest edition for us?
I just want to make a special announcement. There's public eye out this week, and all kinds of. This is our Labor Day, May Day, the real Labor Day, May Day issue. The labor issue, the public eye for May, with articles about the NTT strike, mm-hmm. and contract they won. There's a speech from Gus Wood from the May Day rally on campus that we reprinted. There's a piece by James Kilgore about mass incarceration. All kinds of great local news. A story by Belden Fields about Matt Rush and another one of his victims, Myron Scruggs, as well as my story on Toya Frazier and the new issue.
Wait a minute. Rush was involved with Myron?
That's right. He was one of the two cops. Myron Scruggs got punched in the face at a hotel where he was staying while he was here as a medical worker.
Working in the dialysis unit, right? Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Rush was involved with Scruggs.
That's right.
See, this is why these stories are important, you all. We worked on the Myron Scruggs issue, what, 3-4 years ago?
Right.
And now here this guy shows up again, still brutalizing people, right? And I just have to keep going back to this because, again, it is alleged, but the sources were strong, that this guy was pulled over leaving the Silver Bullet years ago before he ever became a cop. Matt Rush was pulled over by the U of I PD and they let him go. Mm-hmm. And he was drunk driving, right? And then so he continues on and displays, and he showed his badge. I'm a police officer, and they let him go. Contact Finney. Finney extends his probation. He gets to stay on because he's a type of mindset that Finney and Murphy them wanted on the Champaign police force. And then now that just gives him free reign, so to speak, to go out and abuse other citizens when he could have been stopped a long time ago before he'd ever got to this particular point. If indeed it's true that he was stopped, because can't find the documentation on that, but.
Right. You know, I heard that, too. I heard this, and I chased down the source, and it's pretty well confirmed, let's say. You know, this is time and time again, these cops walk. Once again, we see this case of Jared Gale.
Yep. 5 months.
Five months for three rape cases. Three cases. One. Even one of those, you know, right. should have put him away. And this is, you know, we contrast this with other folks like Toya Frazier, who got 3 years for a theft case and ends up dead in the jail. So for you know, common folks, you know, they get the hard end of the criminal justice system, but there's a separate standard of justice for these cops, mm-hmm. who time and time again walk and walk and walk, whether it be Jared Gale or Matt Rush.
Or Kurt Yort or whoever it might be, right? It's going all the way back. So
on down the line.
So, but this also is why, this is part of the reason why you all, and why we've been fighting this whole phone justice issue all the way back to Sandra Otten. I don't know if you had a chance to listen in a little bit on what she was saying. She gave a great prelude and a history on how we worked on this at the local level with CU Citizens and the county board, and what drove her, or from her own son being incarcerated and his mental state, why, and what he was being exposed to while he was in there, and so why it was so important for her to stay connected with him and pay those rates. But not everybody can pay those rates. I know, coming from the streets, when even some of our guys got locked up, we put a block on the phone. Like, you, I mean, you can't keep calling me, right? You know what I'm saying? Because I can't pay for it, right? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, go for it. Just
so that was an important case here in Champaign when we first became aware of ourselves back in 2004-2005. There were three jail deaths locally here in Champaign County, and one of those cases, Terrell Layfield. I don't know if you remember the name Terrell Layfield.
Yes, indeed, I remember Terrell.
Right,
18 years old, right?
Right, and
for giving a false name, for he gave a name that wasn't quite Terrell, but it was like a shortened version of his name or a middle name or something. It wasn't like he just gave a whole false name type of stuff, but he got charged with obstruction of justice, right?
Right, and so he has him in the jail and trying to call his girlfriend, I believe it was at the time, calling his family, and eventually the phones get cut off. He can't get in contact with them. Things, I don't know, it's still not clear what happened in all these cases, but it was his family speaking out and saying, you know, it was the case of our phones getting cut off, and it was folks like Sandra reaching out to the families and making contact with them and getting the stories from the families. It's these stories, you know,
it's that independent media, right?
Right, and it was from these stories that we build movements, you know, so these aren't just abstract ideas. It's people being willing to step up and tell their stories, which is so critically important. Not, you know, you and me are comfortable. We can get up and do this on a Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about ordinary folks who aren't used to sticking their necks out. You know, and so when they step out and stand up and speak for themselves and fight for themselves, that's when we can build movements and we can really change things. So,
you know, as soon as you said that, you summoned up the spirit of Grandpa Walfelt and his little card. So the turtle can't move unless he sticks his neck out.
That's right.
Right? You know, so we can't move these things without, you know, it is real that there is a sense of feeling vulnerable when you step up and you challenge the police or you challenge the status quo or rich folks or whoever, you know, but there's also a sense of freedom associated with that, right? You know, and freedom ain't free,
right?
You know? For sure. So, but go ahead, man. I'm just jumping in and out.
Yeah. So that was the case in Champaign County in 2004 or 5 when it was dug up that the county was taking $14,000 a month in kickbacks. And so we had heard about this for a long time, and we had a chance a couple years ago to get involved with the National Campaign for Prison Phone Justice and work with other people like Paul Wright at the Prison Legal News and Alex Friedman there. Who've been doing work putting out the Prison Legal News is like, you know, for my guys who I talk to inside, it's like, you know, their favorite newspaper. The Prison Legal News has been for 20 years been putting out great stuff, and so we had a chance to work with these people, and as well as with Nation Inside and Nick Suberla and other folks around the country who are doing this work, and so we were able to then work on a federal level, a national level, to lobby before the FCC. And the FCC has a commissioner named Commissioner Minion Clyburn, who's been a champion around this issue. And so working with Commissioner Clyburn and our national campaign, we were able to, in October 2015, just last year, secure a national vote to regulate the whole prison phone industry. And this was a at least 10-year campaign. Initially started out by a woman named Martha Wright. She was a grandmother who had a son locked up and was just outraged by paying these exorbitant phone calls. So Martha Wright, she ended up filing a lawsuit that eventually was directed to the FCC, and the FCC it took it up, and it was pushed forward. And it took a lot of lobbying, a lot of stories, a lot of groundwork. And here in Champaign, we started collecting stories through our networks, you know, through groups like Ripple Effect, who works with families with incarcerated loved ones in town here, Ripple Effect, which is doing really important work.
Yes, indeed. So let's give a shout out to Rebecca Ginsburg, Education Justice Project, First Followers over there with James and Marlon, Tamika, Snow, for sure, at Bethel AME Church.
Right, and yeah. Annette Taylor, of course, behind Ripple Effect. And
that's right.
So we've met people in Chicago through EJP's work and Rebecca Ginsburg's work, and started talking to people who were willing to speak out and tell stories of going into debt, $20,000, $30,000. You know, if you are one of our people we interviewed, Miguel Saucedo, talked about his brother who had a life sentence, and they'd spend, you know, $100 a month, $1,000 a year over, you know, a long-term sentence. You know, you can imagine these things add up.
I remember Miguel. You made me think about that. Yeah. Wow.
So it's these stories and piling on these stories of, you know, a woman, Maritza Rivera, who in Chicago told me, you know, in 3 years that her son had been locked up. She had gone into massive credit card debt. You know, she says, I'm not the kind of person who racks up any kind of credit card debt. She wanted to insist, you know. I don't, you know, my credit is always straight. But she racked up thousands and thousands of dollars. So it's these people being willing to come out and tell their stories. And I remember it was August, September last year at a Ripple Effect event, going and hearing people talk for the first time and getting a chance to meet Annette Taylor and meeting Wangel Harvey Robinson, who's from town here and whose parents were incarcerated when she was in the third grade. Wangel, who's, I think, maybe 21 years old now.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up Wangel's stuff on Facebook or something, because I know she was involved in several different things. I think there was a pageant or something that she was just, she may have won or almost won. I don't know all the details on it, but I was trying to make that connection to, you know, just everyday citizens to see how important your story is.
Right. Yeah. And so Wangel, who's just a really bright, sharp youth around town, she stepped up and told her story to a crowd in the room. And she clearly had some, you know, willingness and was very photogenic. And and so approached her and talked and built a relationship with her.
She Rosa Parks at the prison phone justice movement.
right. So she went to the FCC meeting in October to be present for the final vote and to talk with the commissioners, as well with Greg Gaither, as well with our state representative, Carol Ammons, who went to Washington, D.C. to lobby the FCC last fall. So it's this way that's really exciting to me, which we are able to connect local people, local youth in town, to a national campaign like this. It's really exciting to be a part of.
Wangel, I mean, you know, so my sister Deanna has connections to the Harvey family and to her some of Wangel's relatives, her mom and stuff. And, you know, it's just connecting those dots. The spoken word artist that I played out of Harvard, he did the commencement piece, and he talked about looking into the eyes of these individuals, and you can, if you chart the course of the constellations, you can see their genius, right? You know what I mean? And making that connection of a young girl like Wangel, and knowing the history of some of her surroundings and family and stuff, and here she is in D.C., affecting change on a level that's, so it's not just like, okay, I'm somebody because I'm in D.C., right? You know, I'm getting past the whole fame and all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about the work that gets done. This means that we save millions and millions and millions of dollars of families who won't have to go into $20,000 or $30,000 worth of debt. And I guess we should say, you know, I've been in that county situation before, and I'm calling home, calling. Or calling whoever I was trying to talk to years ago, right? The phone is right there in the cell, right? You have direct access to it. Every time you pick it up, if they pick up the other line, that charge is in effect, right? So there is some responsibility on the other end. So even if we lower it, that don't mean you call me twice as much, right? You know what I'm saying? And make the phone bill go right back up to where it was, right? If it's done, if everybody plays their part appropriately, indeed it will save, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Because you're talking about federally across the state of Illinois, and locally, you're talking about people really being able to, over the course of time, save hundreds of millions of dollars. Definitely.
Right. And with the agreement that we got this last week with the at the bill at the Illinois State Legislature, uh-huh. that means calls are going to be half as much. So you can make twice as many calls just in case you want to. All right. So, but we this last week secured a bill that lowered the cost of prison phone calls in Illinois in the IDOC, Illinois prisons, to 7 cents a minute. Previously, a call was about $4.08, and now
a
it's
minute. Going to be, you mean or for 15?
$4.08 for a 30-minute call.
$4.08 for a 30-minute call.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and which that'll be lowered to about $2.10 now.
Hmm, okay.
7 cents a minute for a 30-minute call.
All right.
So that was the decision that we were able to push. We were originally pushing for 5 cents a minute and eliminating the commissions. The Illinois Department of Corrections collects $12 million a year, $12 million a year off of these phone calls. And we were able to put a significant chink in that, lowering it to, they'll get a small sliver, but by January 18, they'll be set at 7 cents a minute. And we argued that they would increase the volume of the calls, that they would make a small cut. They said that they were paying for HIV, Hep C treatments, medical treatments.
Mm-hmm.
We were never able to actually produce the documentation on that, but, eventually,
well, they weren't, right?
They weren't. Right. We weren't able to force them to produce the documentation. And so we struck a deal to at the 7 cents rate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to significantly cut out those commissions and lower the cost of the phone calls in Illinois.
I mean, you just cut it in half, right? You know?
Right. And so Illinois was really one of the most egregious examples of a state that had high cost of phone calls and these large commissions. We had the largest commissions in the country. And so it's a major dent in these massive industry led by Securus and GTL, these massive companies that are making money off of mass incarceration. So people talk about the prison industrial complex and private prisons.
Mm-hmm.
What's actually much more common and everyday are these phone profiteers, people running the commissaries, the vending machines,
mm-hmm.
all these other little industries around the prisons and jails, like Aramark.
Who also feed your children at the public schools, too, in most places, right?
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right, a big prison profiteer, Aramark. So it's, I think, bringing awareness to that kind of that these prison profiteers and further awareness around how large and massive this system is, this modern mass incarceration.
And just how backwards it is. You know, I want to encourage everyone to take an opportunity to check out the video, Where Do We Invade Next? By Michael Moore. Absolutely jaw-dropping, mind-blowing, and inspiring film to check out, because it's dealing with prison profiteering. It's dealing with various different things around what we've talked about, the food, Aramark, and how they are. What the food looks like for our students in public schools compared to what they are eating in some of the other European countries. The students over there was like, that's not food that you eat. I don't know what that is, right? And I mean, it's amazing to think that you are not, as Ken Salo pointed out to us, that, you know, what is being considered food nowadays is really just a concoction of sugar, salt, and fat, and is given to you as if it's food, and it's not. It's not. It doesn't even have nutritional value. And so, thinking about the exploitation that's taking place, I'm actually telling you, I'm selling you food, but I'm not selling you food, right? I've gotten you to buy into thinking that chips and pizza with whatever it is food, and it's not, right? And just thinking about Aramark making all his money off of it, or whoever it is who sees the prisoners, right, as profits, right? I mean, that's what it boils down to. That's why I've always called it a concrete plantation, or whether it's Victoria's Secrets or whoever is making money off of the people working inside these concrete plantations, especially when you realize that you're not dealing with, you know, axe murderers and rapists and individuals who are, you know, preying upon children and elderly people and taking advantage of them. You're talking about low-level drug dealers or people who didn't pay a fine, or you got arrested for driving on suspended license too many times, right? You know, I mean, it's crazy to think about how we take these individuals, like Sandra's son when she was talking about, when Sandra was talking about, you know, her son, and all of a sudden you, and then in the mind of a Deb Busey, according to what Sandra said earlier, she said Deb Busey told her, I don't care about prisoners. They've done their crime. They got to do their time. Now, mentally ill, I support whatever you're trying to do with them. But you're talking about somebody like, as if, you know what I mean? You just grouped everybody into this hodgepodge of folks who are just the worst of the worst. And so you could be somebody like a Terrell Layfield who gave a false name, and then you put him in with El Chapo or somebody, right? You know what I mean? It's crazy, right? Mm-hmm. You know, to think that you would just group people and lump people together like that.
And that we would allow for such exploitation of them by these industries. The reason these phone calls are so outrageous is because we don't care about these people.
Yeah,
it's a monetary reflection of society's views on these people.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Carol pointed out something earlier, and I think that we have this connection, because also Carol cannot go to Springfield and act like she don't care about these people. Because those of us who sent her there will quickly remind her that we sent you there to work on the behalf of this foundation that we built over the last decade, right? So you ain't like some of these other folks who can just be disconnected from your constituency. We ain't gonna allow that to take place. And she also put in place those committees for people to come and talk. But, you know, it's just a little bit different story, because some of them politicians are, hey, they for sale, man. I'm just going to tell the truth.
Sure.
Go ahead, caller. You on the air.
Thank you. This is Sister Carol calling again.
Go ahead, Sister Carol.
I just want to, just correct that at the time when Deb Finan was on the county board, that was the statement that she made, not Deb Busey.
Oh, it was Deb Finan.
To Sandra Otten's communication, it was not Deb Busey, it was Deb Finan.
You're talking about our mayor of Champaign?
You're talking about the mayor of Champaign.
So I just wanted to correct that.
You were just calling to correct the record. I understand.
Yes, I don't know if her opinion has changed at this point, but certainly that's what Sandra Otten recounted. The other thing is that when we began to work on this issue at the state level, very few legislators even understood or knew that this was a practice. I just wanted to say that, because as I began to lobby on the floor, the legislators in the House, when I began to talk to them about this issue, they couldn't believe it. They could not believe that this was happening. Only a few of them had any information prior to me talking to them, because of people like Representative Monique Davis, who attempted to do this several years before I arrived there, but couldn't get the traction because people didn't understand the issue and she didn't have the
team that you had.
That's correct. I mean, everything is timing, and it does matter who's organizing and pushing this initiative. You know, we had an FCC ruling that helped also kick us in. We also got a ruling from the ICC in support of that initiative that we put forth, and Brian Dolliner.
So just quickly, what
who
is
wrote this? Wait a minute, let me say, he wrote, I just want people to understand, he found, researched, and wrote the legislation that we put forth. So I just want to kind of put it in perspective. That,
so you saying this a regular average every, well, he's not a regular average everyday citizen, but we, no, let me say this clearly then. The duty and responsibility of a citizen, he accepted that and acted upon it and actually wrote the bill?
Yes. So through his research, his connecting with other organizations who was working on this initiative, we came up, I believe, Brian, with the strongest legislation that exists to date. So we didn't just deal with a race.
So you mean you don't have to be a... You do not have to be a legislator to write a bill?
No, you don't. And a lot of bills are written by citizen groups.
And you can be an academic and write a bill, too.
You can certainly be an academic
Dolliner.
And write a bill.
Even in this town, you can be a scholar and write a bill. So
that's correct.
Yeah, I looked at legislation. I looked at Monique Davis's legislation. She had carried HB 3095. I still remember the numbers. She tried to carry it through the legislature a few times. I mean, I talked to people, and they said how difficult this issue was for years and years and years. And it was, you know, I remember all of us sitting down and just saying, you know, we got this FCC decision behind us right now. We need to do this right now. Yeah. The budget looks crazy. This, I don't know what's going to happen with the budget in the next 3-4 days they've got. It's getting really crazy in Springfield. There's a lot of shouting matches going on over there. But we said, you know, the timing and the momentum is on our side. And so we pushed this forward. We looked at the New Jersey bill. We got, we have immigration rights activists in New Jersey who helped us write the bill. We looked at models from both New York and New Mexico. And it was, you know, people in the national campaign pointing us to the other legislation, the model examples that we built this legislation on. So it took research. It took people's stories, people campaigning, people at a legislative level, people at a federal level, all pushing at this from different angles. And it was a whole team effort. And we want to send a big shout out and much love to Danielle Chenoweth out there.
Absolutely, I'm sure she's listening. She sent me a text and said, "BD got it. Don't worry about it."
So can I just add one little factor to the effort and the work?
Hey, look, this is your show. You can add if you want to.
Thank you, sir. certainly we want to send mad respect to Monique Davis, because Monique Davis, who had been trying to do this work well before the FCC picked up and ruled and all of this stuff, she didn't have that in her toolbox at the time. Mm-hmm. But when I spoke to Monique and I said, "Would you mind?" So this is a there's a process in the legislature. You know, "Do you mind if I pick up this legislation and for us to rewrite it and carry on the prison phone justice work?" And she said, "I would be honored." Monique was not able to be on the floor when we lobbied and ultimately passed out of the House 59 vote, almost veto proof in this legislation, which we will when we do it on concurrence. But Monique wasn't there. But it was all the groundwork she had laid. Then we come along with all of the other tools, and we put it all together to build a house. And I think that that is a critical point where people understand that you have to educate your legislators. Don't judge. Don't think that because they're not moving in a certain way that they completely understand your issue and they just are non-responsive. You have to do the part necessary to – we did petitions. Right, Brian? It was petitions. It was 5,000 radio.
Signatures.
It was articles. It was multiple aspects to this campaign. And because we had, at that time, a Carol Anders who understood the issue, then I can go directly to the legislators on the floor, and then they, meaning our advocacy team, included Sandra, and our students from the university who came through and lobbied hard every legislator that I had touched. So it was a group effort that was beyond comparison. And then we got the right Senate sponsor, because that's important too. Senator Collins, who had been working with Rainbow Push on similar kind of criminal justice reform legislation in the past, when I talked to her early on and asked her to pre-file my bill so that nobody else could get it, she was instrumental in pushing Department of Corrections, who attempted to ignore me because I was new and they didn't think I could get it done. We pushed back on them time after time. And by the time we got to the Senate committee, the Department of Corrections assistant deputy attempted to sell me what I call a crock of mess in the Senate hearing. I rejected that, testified in the Senate, and had won the support of 9 of those senators to get it out of committee where they didn't think we were going to be able to do that.
Okay.
And then finally,
I'm going to let you get to that. No, I don't want you to get off. I want you to just let me ask you a question.
Okay.
All right.
But it's a story that has to go in time.
Okay, go ahead. Finish the last part of the story. Go ahead.
The last part of the story is that because they thought that we wouldn't be able to do it, once they noticed that we had it at the Senate level, that the governor's office finally stepped in to help finish out the agreement.
Okay. So you've shared a lot, and I know you've learned a lot since you've been there. So, but as my job as a radio host and air shifter down here, I want to make sure that my listeners are actually following along as well, right? And so the theme from this morning has been how the everyday person who has a story or has an issue can get involved and affect public policy at the federal level, at the state level, and at the local level, right? And so just want to back up a little bit. We talked about how we call him BD on or the Pink Panther, but he's also Dr. Brian Dolliner, right? Did the research around this issue. We talked about Sandra and all her stuff at this point, but right now we're talking about along the way how everyday people plug into this. And then you said you guys collected 5,000 signatures, right?
5,000 signatures through with our partners at Color of Change. We did, yeah.
Okay, so a lot of these were online, right?
That's right.
But you still had to do the work to get that done, right? And then the students, Carol, who you have come in who are doing intern work, right?
Yeah.
Right? Went to Springfield, yeah. Right? Because we're not talking about just riding over to Brookings. We're talking about driving to Springfield,
yeah,
right?
Shout out to Laura and to Thomas and Brandon.
There you go. Shout them out.
And all the folks who helped us hustle. And because that's a lot of legwork. Just run around trying to chase down senators and representatives is crazy.
Right, so you're in Springfield. You got to actually find these people, get them to talk to you, and you got to tell. You got to know the issue, so you can talk to them about it because they're gonna have questions and concerns about it, right? And then, Carol, you talked about a Senate sponsor. Why is it in? What does that mean? I thought you guys passed it out of the House. What do you need a Senate sponsor for?
So you know, every bill has to go from originate in one chamber and then go over to the other chamber to be voted on. And so once we pass it in the House chamber, then we send it to the Senate for them to discuss and then vote on as well. And so in order to, you want to work with your senator up front along the way. And so that's what we did on this landmark legislation because this had not been done in Illinois in the past.
Okay, so, all right, so that's educating us all about how it gets done. So it starts in one chamber, like the House chamber, and then it goes to the Senate chamber. And if the bill that you send to the Senate chamber doesn't change, then it goes to the governor's desk, and he either signs it or doesn't, right?
Correct.
So you guys sent it over to the Senate chamber, and there was a few changes, right? Like it went from 5 cents a minute to 7 cents a minute, right?
We got the attention of the governor.
Yeah.
Yeah. After a while.
Once it started to get into the Senate chamber and you all had the...
It was moving.
Then they got involved in it as well. Now, that's an important piece here because what we're talking about is the Illinois Department of Corrections is a very powerful group and has a lot of powerful lobbyists and a lot of connections all throughout the state of Illinois. So I wanted to sort of touch on that. Why, Carol, do you feel like you could be one of those fearless legislators in the face of IDOC? Why didn't you buckle when they came calling and try to push you around? Because you're not in the pocket of corporations and your people support you. Uh-huh. Go ahead. Tell them, Sister Carol.
I'm not in the pocket of corporations and my people support me. We know we were doing the right thing, and we had the research to back what we were doing. So we weren't just kind of saying, we weren't proposing something that was unrealistic to the department nor to the family, right? We were giving them a just proposition, and through the process of negotiations, we were able to win a considerably lower rate than what is currently in effect. And it wasn't an easy win. We had to negotiate that with the governor's office once the governor's office got involved on it. And we came out, and I think Brian agrees with me, we came out with a substantially lower rate than anything that anybody thought we could get out of this deal.
I think you almost cut it in half, right?
We went to 7 cents, which was nearly in half. But we also got rid of those ancillary fees and taxes that they would just pile on top of the rate. And that's what was driving the 30-minute call to $15, right? So we were able to not just deal with the rate, but we dealt with those ancillary fees as well.
So we're talking about how along the way, a path, right? And we don't think, because like what we just said is that it's still making families pay to talk to their loved ones when it's all said and done, and it's still going to be a cost that they have to absorb. But we're talking about how we can, everyday people, just because we're all everyday people. I want to get away from that. We're all everyday people. I got to get up and shower just like everybody else does, right? And you do too. So does President Obama, right? I hope most people get up and clean up a little bit. So anyway, but what I'm saying is that what you are experiencing, all the listeners are experiencing, bringing those issues to the table and being a part of a team of folks who are going to do the research, who are going to do the legwork. Yes, it's going to take some work, but if you want the change, then you're going to have to work for it. What you got for us, BD?
It was intimidating taking on the IDOC and, you know, $12 million you're taking out of their pocket. You know, it's no small feat, you mm-hmm. know, and they sent their bodyguard. I'll just say that
they certainly did.
They sent their bodyguard, a big beefy guy, to come threaten us. And we had the material and the research, and ultimately we got the votes. You know,
standing on principle, and like, look, we ain't going nowhere. You messing with CUCPJ? You ain't who you think you messing with.
Well, they certainly sent the first wave of people. The very first meeting I had was just with a single person from the department, which was their liaison, government liaison. And I, you know, ran the issue down to him in my office, and I remember this to this day, and he looked at me like, but we're doing good things with this money. What do you mean? I said, well, send it to me. Show me where it's going. So he sent us some documents we couldn't translate into English. And then I said, you know, we're going to reduce this rate. He says, okay. And we set up another meeting. I said, sure. So then they sent a black lady who is the assistant director of the Department of Corrections. And she's not a very nice person. They sent her to my office. And we had a pretty, Brian, weren't you on that first call? With DOP? In our office in Champaign?
I was in one of those. I was in one of them. I got
The second meeting, was two of their fiscal people. I guess who it was. And Brian and I and Michelle were on the phone in our office, and they ran down this whole thing, and we said, hey, you know, send us the contracting document. Then they sent us an expired contract where we knew we had, there were some problems there. And then the third meeting was with the director, the black lady. They finally sent her in Springfield. And you know, she's tough. She goes through this whole thing, and we're on the phone. I push back, says, no, we're going to reduce this rate. It's inappropriate what you're doing. And so she left out the meeting and says, well, I'll send you a cost. And guess what her cost was? It ended up being exactly what they recommended at the FCC. I said, no, we're not going to do that. So each time they got, you know, they sent more and more people, right? Then they sent the fiscal officer. And then, you know, they sent all these people until they got to the real people who could make a damn decision. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to do. We could have turned around and been intimidated, but we weren't. And finally we got to the people that could really negotiate this deal. Well, and that's what people need to understand.
All right, so we've got about 10 minutes left, and I wanted to thank you both and thank Sandra and thank everybody for all of the work that's been done around this, because even those people who may not be listening, there's lots of legislation and lots of things that get done that people never recognize. They never know what happened here. They just look up and like, the phone rates are cheaper. What happened? Somebody must have lowered the rates, but they didn't just do it. You know, IDOC must have lowered the rates. No, IDOC didn't do it, right? But I really appreciate all the work. You know, we've been doing a lot of criminal justice stuff, and I appreciate the work and the result, but I also appreciate the process. And so thanks for coming down and hanging out with us. I did want to share with the listeners out there that your state representative was a part of a other eight legislators that presidential hopeful Senator Bernie Sanders sent out an email all across the country saying that, hey, these eight legislators you should support. Because they are progressive, they are fighters, they are not establishment people. You should support them. And your state representative right here in the 103rd District, Carol Ammons, was a part of that eight. The only one in Illinois, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, who received that support from Senator Bernie Sanders, U.S. presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders, the burn man, pointed out to your state representative because she does this type of work, she has this type of heart, and you all should continue to support her. So come on out June 1st.
Doesn't somebody have a birthday coming up?
Yes, indeed. She got a birthday party coming up on June 1st is the community celebration on June 1st at the Pavilion at King Park from 5 to 7 p.m. Inflatables, giant inflatables, face painting, ice cream, softball, barbecue, the whole nine yards. All you got to do is come on out. If you want to help offset that, you'll be some folks out there that you could talk to. But also, the Grown Folks Affair is June 4th at the Flight Bar. And so, Carol, what's the address that they can go to if they wanted more information about that?
You can go to carolammons.com.
CarolAmmons.com. That's going to be from 7 to 10 p.m. on Saturday, June 4th, coming up next Saturday. You all need to come on out and support your state representative, support the Flight Bar. We're going to have a real good time. So y'all come on out and be supportive. Keep her independent. Keep her able to continue doing the things that she has done. What you got for me, BD?
Continue to support WEFT out there. Thank you all for tuning in on a bright Saturday morning. We want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and not represent necessarily WEFT, its board of directors, associates, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
And so that's when you know you're getting down, because I did it earlier, and then BD felt like we better do it again and make sure y'all understand that we are
who's tuning in out there.
That these
they're
are
watching.
So also to SEIU members, coming up on June 25th, Family Fun Day Picnic, Saturday, June 25th from noon to 3 p.m. at the Douglas Park Pavilion in Champaign. So we're going to be over at Douglas this time with SEIU, Local 73. Paul, that means you need to be out there. Dina, Gail, Eminem, Michael, Ricky, all of us, we'll be out there having a good time. So, of course, whoever's out there, you know, I'm sure you're going to come through. But SEIU members, Service Employees International, Local 73, of which yours truly is the president, y'all come on out on June 25th from noon to 3 p.m. at Douglas. So there's a lot going on. Anything happening with CUCPJ today?
Nothing happened today. It's a holiday. I'm trying to get out of town and enjoy myself a little bit. I've been
That's all right, man.
Running around back and forth.
You and little PPJ.
Yeah.
All right.
Brian, thank you for coming in, and thank you for all of the hard work you did over the last 2 weeks. Tell Sarah we love her for her patience while we help the people of Illinois. We appreciate her sacrifice, too.
Hey, thanks, you, Carol. You have a nice weekend and a happy birthday coming up. And you know, I don't follow me up, but you know, I look forward to doing it again. Okay.
Indeed. All right.
All right, man. Talk to you in a minute. Do you want to say something to the folks about your birthday?
Well, we want everybody to come out. Now, I can tell you that there might be some variants, but we will have a great time on June 1st, and I will be more than likely running back from Springfield to make my own birthday party. But I will be there one way or the other, and it doesn't matter if it rains. We'll be under the pavilion. We'll be together. We have a snow cone vendor coming out so that all the children can get snow cones. We also have the first 50 children will get a little gift bag from our office with a few little goodies in it. They're good for them, but we'll be giving those out. The first 50 children will get that. So we want to get there as early as possible. I know it's right after work, so we hope to provide a little refreshments for you as well. It'll be a good time, good celebration. I want people to celebrate with me. It's been a hard 2 years, but it's been a great one. So
all right.
I look forward to people joining us at the park on the 1st, and then certainly if you can make June 4th celebration, we'll be at the Flight Bar downtown Urbana and Lincoln Square from 7 to 10. Go to my website for more information on both of those items, carolannis.com.
All right. Thank you, Sister Carol. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Peace and blessings.
Peace.
Peace.
All right, so we got about 3 minutes left. I really want to send a shout out to all the folks who are listening, who support WEFT, who support all of us. We're going to continue to work together to bring forth the changes that we need, and the policy changes that must take place. And so we're welcoming folks to come down to WEFT to be a part of this team, to also catch up with Brian Dolinar. You can look up Champaign Urbana Citizens for Peace and Justice on Facebook. We still need more people. We need more energy, more ideas, more stories, so that we can continue to affect change and we can raise the next crop of young entrepreneurs, young activists, all of those things that we need in our community. So we want to see you there. So y'all check him out. Check out Champaign Urbana Citizens for Peace and Justice on Facebook.
Pick up a new copy of The Public Eye, a new Labor Day, May Day issue of The Public Eye.
And you can find them all over the city, barbershops, beauty salons, on campus,
libraries, coffee shops,
you know, look for them. Call the Independent Media Center and ask for one.
Or come down to the post office, old post office, 202 South Broadway, Broadway and Elm, downtown Urbana, Independent Media Center.
Yes, indeed. So, all right, we got a couple minutes here, and we're going to ride out. I wonder if I had a outro I could go with. I don't see one. I was looking up some other stuff here. So I'm going to say thank you all for listening. I really appreciate it. You'll catch me back 2 weeks from now. But always listen to WEFT. There's always some good stuff going on. So as John Lee Johnson would say, stay out of trouble. But as Paul Muth likes to say, get in the right kind of trouble. Peace and much love to you.
Brian's so good Peace. At that, too.
Peace. Peace, yeah.
So what you got? You ready to hook up here?
Sure. Got some Glenn Ford as usual. Got some Amy Goodman as usual with her Breaking the Sound Barrier. My voice is still flagging a little bit, so maybe I'll put a sock in it. Ray McGovern. Got a recent interview with Mayor Ray McGovern. He's been writing about a number of things lately. And I think his latest piece is up on Consortium News, the I.F. Stone winning journalist. Amy got it this year. Robert Perry got it last year. If you're not tracking his editorial and his own writing, Robert Perry, that is, and Ray McGovern has his own website, which his son maintains, but he's a retired CIA guy. He used to brief, I don't know, a bunch of presidents, including Bush II, who he seems to still be collegial with, in spite of the fact that he's one of the dissidents that doesn't get on the news, except to be lampooned. He got manhandled at a Secretary of State HRC's address. He heard stuff that he just couldn't countenance, and he turned his back and stood up in the hall, and he got brutalized and bruised, and I think he got a settlement out of that, because he didn't say anything, he didn't disrupt, he just stood up and turned his back to her. So, maybe he has a little personal invest in here, but he's talking about the server issue, which I have not heard anywhere else. Was supposed to have been released yesterday, but it was leaked 2 days in advance. They were trying to put it in the Friday before Memorial Day weekend memory hole, which is a thing that's quite done.